And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is Thursday here in the DMV. Only a few more days to go until the 2023 regular season is over for the Washington Commanders, and we believe a brand new era will truly begin here with the burgundy and gold. With that in mind, today is one of those days where I have on my guy Al Galdi, host of the Al Galdi podcast. We have gone back and forth on each other's podcast throughout the year or throughout the season. It's been a lot of fun. I don't know, is fun the right word? But, you know, it's fun to discuss these things with Al, but obviously it's been a trying turn. But one thing, we pretty much had one specific focus on today's podcast. And it was something that Ron Rivera said the other day. When asked basically that he thinks, or at least hopes, that he left the team in a better position than when he picked it up in 2020. So we looked at that. We looked at it through various categories, and we came up with the verdict. So we'll get to that in a few minutes here on the podcast, which, of course, you can find on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you do your podcasting. New words today from me. On The Athletic, coaching candidates. We already did our GM candidates, now coaches. I think this was a little trickier because if we assume that the GM is going to pick or help pick the coach, got to get to that step first. But nonetheless, I did speak with people around the league to get a feel for how they see the top candidates. I think there's a lot more difference of opinion here than there is on the GM list, but nonetheless, a good exercise. So hopefully you can check that out on The Athletic when you have time. And if you're not a subscriber, obviously be great if you considered doing so. All right. So not a ton else to get into today. Again, Sam Howell is going to start this week for Washington. I don't know how – it seems like there could be a fair amount of other guys who are out. For example, today, both Curtis Samuel and Cam Curl went from practicing somewhat yesterday to DNP today. I don't get the sense that they're hurt. I get the sense that two guys who are free agents are probably not going to play in this game. Kendall Fuller, I would assume, is also going to be out. John Allen has not practiced the last 2 days, et cetera. So could be a very different look for Washington, I think. The offensive players, for the most part, in terms of the fantasy football type positions, think they're going to play. But we will see what happens. We'll find out more tomorrow. Officially on Friday, they'll give us the injury report for the game. Needless to say, just as a heads up, on Monday, I will have another podcast because we believe if there are changes are going to be made specifically with Ron Rivera, they would take place, you know, Sunday night, but most likely on Monday. So needless to say, we'll have a podcast and excited to discuss what happens next. I mean, you know, I'm not excited to discuss somebody losing their job if that's how things go. Excited, though, to discuss a new era. And I think for me, and Al and I touched on this, it's right now the focus is Ron Rivera. But the reality is it's really the first start without Dan Snyder. That is the what's going on here. Rivera was the last coaching hire by Snyder. Other than the name, which many of you still don't like, I understand. That kind of puts a bow on the Snyder era. Yes, of course, there's the after effects, the ripple effects of things that happened over the course of his era that still affect this team now. But, you know, we will now have Josh Harris in position to make moves as he sees fit. And, you know, the possibilities are endless, frankly, but among the possibilities, some level of normalcy with the ownership of this franchise. So I think to that extent, it's a very interesting time ahead for sure, and we will discuss that on Monday. I will have a guest for sure. So, and we'll go from there. And obviously, over the next, you know, few weeks, all the way through the draft, it's going to be busy, right? They've got to pick, again, if we're assuming Rivera is gone, not just a new coach and most likely a completely new coaching staff, or at least the majority of a new staff. Same thing with the front office. Ron Rivera is overseeing the head of the front office. I would imagine some of the names that we discuss all the time, the executives there, will be out as well. How does that get reshaped? What are they doing at quarterback? We know that right now they have a shot at the number two overall pick. There are a bunch of games beyond like whether Washington and New England win or lose that will determine essentially the tiebreaker for them between picking second or third. As long as Washington loses, they can't pick worse than third. Arizona has got they're not going to catch either of these teams unless they both were to win. And then whether they're picking two or three, they'll be quarterback will be in play. And what does that look like? So there's a lot to get into. Oh, I didn't even mention $90 million in cap space, tons of free agents, a bunch of the guys that I just said. How does that play out? So it's going to be busy. I would just encourage you, if you like this podcast, if you just find yourself every once in a while checking out this podcast, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. I plan on, hopefully, planning on being at the various pre-draft events, the combine, hopefully the Senior Bowl. We'll be at the owners meeting. So a lot to get into, and I think it's going to be a wild ride. So I hope you guys will come along for the ride here on the podcast as well as at The Athletic. All right, that said, let's get to it. Al Galdi is at Al Galdi on Twitter. I'm, of course, at Ben Standing. I keep saying Twitter, but it's X, you know what I mean. Hopefully you guys are along for the ride. But for now, let's get to it. Here's my conversation with Al Galdi on whether Ron Rivera has left Washington in a better place than when he found it, here on the Standard Grimaldi Podcast.
They said it couldn't be done, that two men could not alternate weeks on their various podcasts throughout an NFL season. But we're here to prove them wrong, as Al Galdi and I have made it to week 18. I get to host the last episode of this venture during the regular season. Sources say this may continue into the offseason. But here we are, Al. I didn't go back and listen to the first one of these we did. Boy, I have to imagine we were happier people. That we were more excited about what might happen this year than the way we are right now.
Yeah, well, I consider the partnership between you and me like the Ron Rivera, Eric Bieniemy partnership. You know, we embarked on this voyage this season. We didn't know where it was going to take us. We have made it to the end of the season. I don't know that we could say it was a successful season. We'll let other people determine that. I'm also not sure whether you're Ron or I'm Ron or you're Eric or I'm Eric, but we can figure that out later. But yeah, like Ron and Eric, I think that the tone of things back in August and September, a bit different than the tone of things right now.
Well, hopefully various people are not complaining to you about my podcasting style, because that would be we don't need that out there into the world. Yeah, here we are, week 18. We're talking on Thursday morning. You know, we're all anticipating sometime after the game, presumably on the league's Black Monday, that there will be major changes. Ron Rivera most likely gone. And I say most likely just to, be kind of nice about it, I guess. Beyond that, we will have to see, but it's a lot is to come. We're going to talk about something that Ron Rivera has, like we've discussed a lot about what's gone wrong this specific season. We've discussed, looking ahead, what kind of needs to happen. But Ron Rivera brought up a topic in recent days about whether or not he's left this organization in a better place than when he found it. And he's talked about that in recent days. And I thought, and we'll each offer a final verdict, but I wanted to go through it sort of a side-by-side comparison to a degree with the team he inherited and the team that he's essentially leaving for whomever comes next. I I'm not sure what else to I'm not sure what else to ask you before we even get going, but what I guess, like, when you look back on that 2020 start, how far away did you think that they were from being anything?
Well, the hope was always that the roster actually wasn't as bad as we thought, and that coaching had failed the then Redskins, who then became Washington football team for that 2020 season, more than the actual talent had failed the team. And isn't it funny, right? Because that's now the hope, or at least had been the hope. But I think that idea has been dispelled in a lot of ways. I think the talent isn't as good as we thought. But, you know, what I always hoped going from 2019 to 2020 was something like, okay, we're not going to see Montez Sweat in pass coverage anymore. You know, like, I remember one of the first things that came out when Jack Del Rio was hired as defensive coordinator in 2020, January of 2020, was that he said the team was going back to a 4-3 base defense. And that got people so excited, right? Because this era of the 3-4 never worked. The team really never had good defenses with the 3-4. And, you know, even with the idea that nickel really is the true base in the modern NFL, the notion of, hey, now our edge defenders are going to be true edge guys, and we're not going to have the likes of Montez Sweat and, you know, Ryan Kerrigan dropping back in a pass coverage, and they're going to be true pass rushers. And, you know, when Ron said things like, we're going to play the run on the way to the quarterback, I remember that got people all kinds of excited. So, yeah, I mean, there was this thought process of, okay, the talent maybe isn't that bad. It just needs to be channeled in a better direction. And then the team went 7-9 and won the horrible NFC East in 2020. And you felt like, you know what? The coaching did do this team well. You know, like, if you go back to 2020, remember one of the big things that Ron and the team got praised for was the low rate at which guys tested positive for COVID. Remember, that was like such a big deal. They handled COVID so well. They handled it so responsibly. And this was representative of the new culture, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, now we know a lot more about COVID than we did in 2020. And we know a lot more about what happened with Ron and with this team. And so, you know, I thought that things were going in the right direction. You know, I was willing to sort of accept in 2021, well, the season unraveled because of the COVID outbreak late in the year, and the defense was bad early in the year, but maybe the team wasn't as bad as it looked in 2021.
And
but
Fitzpatrick, like, got hurt 10 minutes into the season, so whatever that was going to be.
Right. But you know, it started to really hit me last season, and it sure came to the forefront this season. When you have to keep making excuses for why a team isn't winning, when you have to keep doing the yeah, but thing, there's a problem. And we are surrounded in this current NFL with quick turnarounds. And so, yeah, things did not go well. Things really unraveled this year. And I think it's very difficult to put a positive spin on the Ron Rivera era for Washington at this point. I don't know how you do that at this point.
No, I don't. I don't either. I was looking back at some of my old articles for, you know, just to doing some research for, you know, whatever I'm going to write over the next few days. And there was the game against the Titans in that was last year, right? They lose that game. Wentz got hurt the next game. And I was looking back at some things, and Rivera was talking about, like, what, you know, about where this team was. And he goes, quote, this is never going to happen overnight. It's never going to happen overnight. But it was year three. It wasn't year one. That was what he was saying in year one. And okay, that's fair. Even in year two. Okay. But this was year three. The same sort of questions remained. This is also the same guy who, after they lost to Tampa, said, quote, this group, I think if we can grow and learn together and add a couple more pieces, I think we have a shot next year, end quote, meaning a shot at, a real contender. Well, that doesn't sound like you're thinking this is going to take time. You sound like you're thinking, you know, this was something to do. And then it just kind of kept, like you said, it kind of kept going from there. There was always an excuse to a degree as to why things were not working out. But okay, you know, as Mark McGwire would say, I'm not here to talk about the past. We're here to talk about, well, I guess we are a little bit. We're here to compare the past to where things are at right now. So here's what I'm gonna do. We're not gonna go through every player or anything, but I'm gonna I broke it down into a few different categories, and we'll react to where they were then and where they are now. Let's start at quarterback. fair to say that they're still in the position of having to find one. Back then, there was a Dwayne Haskins had played a few games late in his rookie season. I think there was at least some reason to be hopeful based on some strides made. I have said many times I was personally out when he did the selfie on the sideline after the Detroit win, because I just can't comprehend that even like a high school quarterback would have done that. And that said something to me. But I understand, like, broader picture, there was at least some reason to consider it versus Sam Howell. Sam Howell, much better performance this year than they ever received from Haskins, and he's going to play all seven. He'll start all 17 games this year, first quarterback to do that since Kirk Cousins. A lot of ups and downs, particularly the end of the year, but nonetheless, I think I still would say Howell exceeded or expect realistic expectations. But is he the starter for next season? I think that is very much in doubt. So they're kind of in the same boat. But Howell, I would say, is a better, for me, a better upside than where Haskins was at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tricky because we know what ended up happening with Dwayne as an NFL quarterback, at least with Washington, right? And I'm not talking about him passing away. I'm talking about how horribly his 2020 season with the team ended up going, and he ends up getting cut before the end of the season. So it's like, I don't think we would view Sam in that light. But, you know, the thing is this, and you hit on it, Dwayne did play well over his last two games in his 2019 rookie season. So there was this sense of, hey, maybe things were starting to click for him. And so there actually was some optimism with him going into 2020. I remember that. I remember thinking that of, hey, you know, it was rough to begin, but they actually did pretty well over those last two games, two NFC East games. So you thought that maybe, just maybe, there was something there. There isn't that optimism with Sam. You know, how a quarterback, a young quarterback, ends a season matters so much, as we all know. And if you took Sam's first 2 months and made them the last 2 months, the conversation right now would be totally different. But because he has ended his season in a poor way, I mean, I guess we'll see what he does against Dallas, but I don't think anyone is going to go nuts, even if he does do well in that game. I think there's actually less optimism with Sam as a true potential franchise quarterback than there was with Dwayne going into 2020. But yes, I mean, if you're doing the compare and contrast of the two seasons, Dwayne's 2019 versus Sam's 2023, Sam had the better year, although, you know, it's a low bar and, you know, it's tough with Sam. I mean, there have been some good things. He has had his moments, as Ron Rivera likes to say. But, man, the overall numbers are brutal, okay? Like, I mean, if you're just being objective about this, and especially if you look at the advanced stuff, I mean, it has not been a good season for Sam Howell. And this does go down as yet another low-level quarterback season for Washington. Like, this team, year in and year out, since the start of the 2018 season, has gotten really bad quarterback play. And, unfortunately, this season has continued that.
I think I saw a stat on Twitter. Sorry, apologies. I don't know who put this out there, but it was said that basically Sam Howell, with 1 week to go, is tracking to be the first quarterback to lead the league in interceptions and sacks taken since Blake Bortles, I want to say like 2017, something like that. Yeah, I mean, the view we had for Sam was, because it was like watching a kid learn to walk in the first few games. Like, wow, he's not just walking, he's already running. But as the season went on, he's like, well, he's running, but he's running into the furniture. And that's where things started to change. Okay, so that said, there's Dwayne's promise versus Howell's production slash decline. So if you had to compare how this is about, we have to ignore, like you said, what happened with Dwayne on the field after that. So based on that, would you give the edge to the 2020 or 2024, essentially, at quarterback?
Well, I'd give it to 2020 because there was optimism with Dwayne going into 2020. And right now, there isn't this feeling that Sam's the QB1 moving forward, you know? So it may sound odd, but like, if you put yourself back into your mindset of January 2020 versus January 2024, you had more optimism with Dwayne in January of 2020 than you have with Sam in January of 24 in terms of which guy is more likely to be a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think the majority of you would be what you just said. I was already kind of out on the situation. I'm not saying that means I would have drafted Justin Herbert or Tua when they had the second pick, because, you know, there's a lot that goes into that. But I would say how, but I think again the majority view is going to be what you said. I don't argue that at all. All right, let's go to stars. You know, it's good to have good players. You got to have great players, or potentially really good players. And just to go through some of the folks here. So this is where Washington was in 2019. You had on the defensive line, you had John Allen, Daron Payne, Montez Sweat. All of them at that point were in the league for 3 years or less. You didn't have Chase Young yet, so we're not going to say him, but you had the number two pick, but it wasn't definitively Chase Young. They made that determination later. You also had 1 year of Terry McLaurin. You had a multi-time pro bowler in Brandon Scherff. I'm not even going to necessarily count Trent Williams. He had held out the previous season. We knew that relationship was pretty much fractured beyond repair for the most part. So there's that. So that's what they had then, unless I'm forgetting somebody. This year, well, for what it's worth, the Pro Bowl announcement came out yesterday. Zero Washington players. I believe, according to Pro Football Reference, it's the first time since 1993 that they didn't even have one guy make the team. Now, you still have John Allen, Daron Payne, and Terry McLaurin. They're not like stars, but obviously they're good players. But I don't know that we have anybody else to really add to the list beyond that. So how do you look at those situations? Again, they were all kids back then. Now some of these guys are more established. What do you make of that look?
Yeah, I don't. Would you count Adrian Peterson, who was on the 2019 Skins and actually was pretty good, but you know, obviously was past his peak? Is he a star? Do we count him as a star?
You know, he certainly is a name star, and like you know, without him, who knows? You know, those couple of years there was like you know, it was pretty much just ride the old man and hope for the best. Yeah. So to an extent, but you know, I mean, I guess if they were like more of a contending team, you could say, hey, Peterson can still do stuff on a 3-win team. It's like, well. So I don't know how much it matters.
Yeah, I think it's tricky again because the John Allen and Daron Payne say of 2019 into 2020 different than the Allen and Payne of 2023 into 24. Neither guy had really busted out yet. They were viewed as pretty good players, but Allen didn't really bust out until a year or two later, and obviously Payne didn't really bust out until last season. And what's funny now is I get the sense from a lot of Commanders fans, and I'm among them, I think there really has become John Allen and Daron Payne fatigue. You know, neither guy has had a great season this year. You know, they've been okay, especially Allen. I think he's been better than Payne has been. But, you know, especially with some of Allen's comments as the season has gone on, I think there are a lot of people who are kind of like, hey, dude, are you with us or not? And, you know, where's the supposed leadership of you being a team captain and, you know, having gotten paid by this team? So I think it's a wash. I mean, I didn't really feel like there were great stars on this team back then. And I don't really feel that way now. You know, I guess if you're forcing me to pick, I guess I would say now, just because Allen and Payne and Terry are more established than they were, you know, in January of 2020. And if we're not going to count Trent Williams, then I would say now. But man, I mean, it's you know, it's 6-1, half dozen the other, and neither is good. When you talk about like blue chip upper tier of the NFL talent, the team didn't have it then, and I don't feel like the team has it now.
Yeah, I'm with you on they don't have it now. I think that's been one of the revelations of this season. Obviously, I'm not putting the season on necessarily these guys, but like you said, Allen and Payne have not lived up to prior status. And you know, Terry's gonna have another 1,000-yard season, it looks like, but you know, there were stretches where he just wasn't getting the ball. And I think this is what happens in sports. Everybody overhypes or overrips the players on their team because they're the ones you focus on the most. But when we see games like where the Giants have Dexter Lawrence, who's considered to be in that Allen Payne category, really dominate when they faced Washington. You know, A.J. Brown just completely shredding Washington multiple times. You know, maybe Terry McLaurin would have done the same if he went up against Washington secondary. But the point is that, like, they have really good players, but they don't have guys who are truly difference makers. But here's what I'll say to that. And I like the fact that we're somewhat disagreeing on these things. I'm going to say the 2020 better for this reason. Now, I'm classifying it as stars, so what I'm about to say is a little bit inconsistent. But what was good was at that point, at least Alan Payne and Sweat had already shown, hey, there's something here. We'll see where it goes, but there's something here. Plus, they were all still cheap at that point. Same with Terry, right? The potential was there. And what was so fun about the potential was, boy, if you play this right, you could do a lot of interesting things. You have these young guys. Can you add maybe even some expensive free agents to pair with these young talents? We talk so much about the cheap rookie contract with Sam Howell. Look at all the cheap rookie contracts they had across the board with their best players. But now they've all been paid. There's no cheap value anymore on any of those guys. Not to mention, it's 4 years later. Like, I'm not saying that these guys are washed, but you've now lost 4 years of, I guess you could say, the prime of their respective careers. I'm not saying they don't have more years. I'm just saying 4 years have gone by now. There's way more tread in those tires, you know, than there has been to this point. And I, you know, you can't get that back. Whoever's going to come in now, I think almost has to look potentially at those guys as like a negative asset, in the sense of they're going to cost a lot of money. And if this team is truly rebuilding, do you really need these guys on the books? Because where are you going, right? And John Allen may want an extension off of what his deal is, et cetera. We mentioned Brandon Scherff. Look, I think Brandon Scherff was always a tick overrated, but at the same point, he was a pro bowler. He was hurt way too much. By the way, the stat of the year for me is Brandon Scherff has not missed a game in 2 years with Jacksonville, assuming he plays this week.
How about Trent Williams and how he has stayed healthy with San Francisco? Absolutely. Yeah. You know, you do wonder about that. How come those guys couldn't stay healthy here but stay healthy elsewhere? What is this team, Washington, not doing that these other teams are doing, for sure?
Right. So bizarre. So I guess my point is, like, if the new person is coming in and I look at the landscape of, I've got these pieces, and I want to get to the draft picks specifically later, but I've got these pieces, all these young guys who are already showing potential. Terry was a stud right out of the gate, right? There's a lot I can work with here. On over here, all right, well, I guess these are our best players and they're good, but I don't think it's not like the Rams have Aaron Donald and like a bunch of random dudes on their defense, but because you have the guy who's like the best defensive player in football, that's a great son to revolve around. And you don't have that here. So I'm going to go the 2020 group, in part because, like I said, they've been paid. There's a lot more tread on those tires.
Yeah. I guess it depends on how you define stars, you know, right?
Like I said, I was cheating slightly.
Yeah, I was going to say, because, like, I think Alan Payne and Terry have more star power now than 4 years ago. But I hear you. And I mean, it's interesting with the cap stuff, right? Because the team actually is in great cap shape, even though Alan and Payne and Terry have all gotten big money contracts. Of course, a big difference is you don't have Trent Williams' contract on the books anymore. You don't have Alex Smith's contract on the books anymore. You have those two contracts, in addition to some others back in 2019, 2020, right? Like Morgan Moses, Jordan Reed, et cetera.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, not to defend myself, like, star is relative, right? I mean, who's the best? Who's a really good rookie in the league this year? Jameer
Nakua.
Right. I mean, like, is that guy a star? I don't know. I mean, made the Pro Bowl, but, or like Jameer Gibbs. It feels like there's something there, right? That I guess it's like a rising star, but yeah. Okay. Anyway. All right. Well, speaking of that, let's stay in this sort of realm here. Let's go to roster building, right? Because part of this is the exercise is, what is the potential? I just discussed some of it because of some of these guys were really young in 2020. Let's just look at the four first round picks prior to the changes. The first one back in the day, you had Josh Dotson. That didn't quite work out. But then you had John Allen, Daron Payne, and Montez Sweat. And I'll add one more find, and that would be Terry McLaurin. So that's a pretty good baseline right there that the Bruce Allen-led Fred office left for Ron Rivera. Here's what Ron Rivera is leaving the next person, the last four first-round picks. Chase Young, he doesn't live here anymore. Jamin Davis, I mean, I don't personally think they should even pick up his fifth-year option, but we'll see what they do there. Jahan Dotson, I imagine we're all still positive on him, but needless to say, this was a sophomore slump for whatever the reason. And then we have Emmanuel Forbes, who I still think there's something there, but clearly it's been a rocky rookie season in which he was benched and wasn't playing a ton until, like, you know, Benjamin St. Hughes got his concussion and they started and Kendall Fuller didn't play. I don't think this one is much of a, like, oh, and I guess if the extra piece ends up giving one, I was just going to say Cam Curl, but he's a free agent. So I don't even know that we could say that. I'm not sure. I'll go Sam Cosmi as the extra piece. I mean, he is one of the guys. He may be ascended more than any player this year, other than maybe Brian Robinson on the team. So we'll go there. To me, this is a pretty easy one. I don't think the from a roster building perspective, this group compares to that group.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little tricky because that group can be defined in a lot of different ways, right? Because you had Mike Shanahan running things 2010 through 2013, then Bruce Allen 2014, then Scott McLuhan was the GM 2015, 2016, then it was back to Bruce 2017 through 2019. So I guess it's kind of like, where exactly are we drawing the lines here? But I'm with you. I mean, I think the number one thing with this year, as much as anything, has been this realization that the roster isn't as good as we thought. And sort of digging deeper on that is what has become of these Ron Rivera drafts, you know, especially the last three. I feel like the 2020 draft, the one that still had Kyle Smith involved, was maybe okay. You know, like you did get Antonio Gibson, you got Cam Curl, James Smith Williams in the seventh round. And, you know, Chase Young didn't work out, but he was defensive rookie of the year. These last three drafts, man, as time has gone on, they really don't look good. And once you get beyond, I guess, Sam Cosmi, who, you know, didn't really do well until this year. He was maybe okay or initially, but like this year, it's been really good. And Brian Robinson, who's had a good season. Beyond those guys, what? I mean, you know, Derek Forrest, he had one good season and he wasn't playing that well this year. We don't know that he's a true player moving forward. So, yeah, I mean, the drafting has been a real issue. And, you know, it's aggravating as a fan because when Ron hired Martin Mayhew and Marty Herney in January of 2021, and we had the revamping of the front office, I remember talking about this. Like, if you look at Mayhew and Herney and their draft track records, their player personnel track records, they're exceedingly mediocre. And like, yes, there have been some hits, but there have been a lot of misses. And the team for sure was not bringing in two guys with like records of excellence when it came to player personnel. You know, these were records of mediocrity. And it's like, you're revamping the front office and this is what you're turning to, like these guys with their track records. But you say, hey, you know, maybe Ron knows things that we don't know, you know, because there still was like optimism back then coming off the NFC East title. You said, all right, you know, let's see what these guys have. And no, I mean, what they have been is exactly what those track records were at best. I mean, at best, you would say the drafts have been mediocre, but I don't think you could even say that. I think these have been bad drafts, especially these last three.
Again, I was looking back at some of my old stories when they named Herney. Well, they didn't name him, but when Herney was projected as the GM before they switched it and Mayhew took over, I had a story up that was basically Rivera chooses comfort over boldness. You know, that he went for what he knew, which is, of course, everything he did for the most part here. And I don't want to say that like older guys can't get it done as a resident older guy now, but like, yeah, I mean, when you had all of your figureheads were from a different era, you know, we talk about analytics a lot. Like, well, that's, again, it doesn't have to be a young man's game, but it tends to be that way. And they didn't have anybody who was in that vein. I mean, I guess Eric Stokes is a younger guy, but, you know, he's clearly fourth or fifth in line to the throne, you know, when it comes to decision-making there. By the way, just to use a stat that I saw Grant Paulson put up earlier, 34 draft picks, one Pro Bowl, however many free agents they added, zero Pro Bowls. So, yep. I mean, not that the Pro Bowl means anything, but it's at least some sign of, hey, we got some success here. And they got nothing. They've got almost nothing out of that.
Yeah, every Pro Bowl and All-Pro selection of the Ron Rivera era for Washington, other than Chase Young making the Pro Bowl in 2020, was by a player who was acquired prior to Ron being hired as Washington head coach. And that tells you so much. That was it. And, you know, Chase was it. Every other Pro Bowl and All-Pro selection was someone who was already here.
Right. All right. And that goes back to what we were discussing earlier. Even if we're saying, hey, they got Allen, they got Payne, they got McLaurin. Sure, but then what? What else can you do? I mean, so many guys this year, you know, again, we'll see. Like, all the guys in the secondary I almost want to give a pass to, because I just feel like the Brett Wieselmeyer as the DB's coach was just not a good, was not a good fit. Obviously the defense imploded in numerous ways, and you know, maybe just the overhang at the start of the year of sensing that there would be change when the season ended just derailed too many things. But whatever it was, it's just hard to look at this group and go, well, at least they have pieces X, Y, and Z that we'll see. This draft class was, you know, a complete non-factor for the majority of the season. And, you know, the free agents were unhelpful for the most part. All right, so last one I had here was just depth overall. Again, not going to go through every pick in the 53. You look back at what Rivera was inheriting. The secondary at that point was Josh Norman, Quentin Dunbar, Landon Collins, Monte Nicholson in some way, shape, or form. Other than Collins, none of those guys were a factor here or didn't even play here. And Landon Collins was like a fraught relationship the whole time, them wanting him to shift positions. He doesn't want to do it, all these kinds of things. The wide receivers with Terry McLaurin were basically Kelvin Harmon and Paul Richardson. Richardson went from signing a 5-year, $40 million contract in 2018 to not playing again after the 2019 season, showing where that went. Kelvin Harmon, who I liked coming out of college, you know, he just didn't develop to be more than just a guy and kind of bouncing around practice squads since and things like and training camps and things like that. I think those are good examples of where the depth was pretty poor and it's better now. You know, even if Curtis Samuel's not back, you know, Jahan Dotson is certainly a better player than those guys. The secondary, even if Cam Curl and Kendall Fuller are gone, and I'm not saying any of these guys are studs, but like at least I think there's more promise with the St. Juice, the Forbes, the Forests, the Butler, Juan Martin. So at least there's something there. I don't know what it is, but it feels like there's something there. So those to me are examples of where I would say the depth now across the roster is better than. I'm sure you can poke holes at other positions, but that would be my broad view. But how do you kind of look at the overall roster then to now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of these deals where it's like, it's better now, I guess, but it's not good now. You know, it's like saying he's the nicest guy in prison. Well, okay, but what does that exactly mean? And that's kind of how I feel about this. That 2019 Skins team was really bad. There's no question about that. But, you know, this 2023 Commanders team is really bad. And I think if you're going to say that the depth is definitely better on this team than the other team, you are sort of putting faith in, hey, Forbes isn't as bad as he looked this season. St. Juice isn't as bad as he looked this season. And those beliefs may well be true. I hope like heck that they are true. But, you know, I look at something like tight end. Man, this tight end group is not good. This is a second consecutive season of like nothing happening at tight end. And you know, by the way, just as an aside, I mean, Cole Turner, remember all the optimism about him? He can't even get active in this season in which the tight end production has been woeful. And you've got Logan Thomas doing very little and John Bates dropping balls. And Alex Arma is continually active over Cole Turner. Like, what does that say? Armani Rogers is out. Curtis Hodges is out. And Turner still can't be made active. That's just like another one of these things with the bad drafting. And with how, you know, we get excited about someone who was drafted. Because there had been optimism with Cole Turner, right? He had been talked up in previous off seasons and training camps. And like, you know, this is one of these things that I'm sure most people aren't paying attention to. And why should you? But he has not been active with any consistency lately. He's been active a few times, but he's been inactive a bunch too, even though the situation has screamed for someone like him to be given an opportunity. So you have to wonder, why the heck isn't he getting an opportunity? You know, is it that he's not even close to being the player who we had hoped that he would be? So, yeah, I mean, I guess you would say now is better. But again, I think it does require putting some faith into some guys. And it isn't close to what it should be. That's for darn sure.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I liked your analogy. The nicest guy in prison is good. Yeah, no, look, I mean, in the NFL, any sport, you have to have talent. You know, it's sort of like I look at like the Wizards, terrible team this year. We get it. Not that they're trying to be a contender. They have all their players, their top 10, 11 players are all fine players. They can all play for contenders, but they have nobody to carry them. And that's where we're like, so like, it's like, okay, some of these guys on this team are fine, But like, to what end? Like, they're not good enough to be like, oh, here they come. And simultaneously, there's not enough to carry them to, you know, to better days. So, yeah, it's yeah. I was like, yeah, I give the nod to the current group, but like you said, it's a shrug situation. It's hard to get particularly excited.
It's going to be really interesting to see what the next football operations regime A, thinks of the players on this roster, and B, does with the players on this roster. Because if we do see, say, Forbes be a lot better next season and St. Juice be a lot better next season, then you can say, well, the Ron Rivera regime drafted the right guys, but just did the wrong things with those guys. See, I think what's tricky is, did Ron pick the wrong players, or has he just done bad stuff with those players? You know, is this an issue of drafting or more player development? And it's always so difficult to differentiate between those two things. So you always kind of just lump them together. But there is a difference, right? Are you picking the right guys and doing the wrong things with those guys, or are you just not picking the right guys? And we don't know right now. But whatever the case, the production isn't what it should be. That's clear.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the NFL, more than the NBA, coaching matters in all sorts, but to the degree it matters, I think it's more in the NFL. The NBA, it's almost all about the players and just what they can do. In the NFL, it's about schemes and fit and all these things. And I would, you know, again, to go back to, I think the defensive back room is the one most interesting relative to what you were just saying. A year ago, that was one of the most exciting parts of the team. And you had Chris Harris, who was being viewed as an up-and-coming coach. He leaves, goes to the Titans, and they just promote a guy who was here but 3 or 4 years prior was coaching high school, and things fell apart. I don't know that it was on Wieselmeyer, but I don't know that it wasn't. And like you said, maybe we'll get a better feel going forward when there's new coaches looking at these guys. All right, the last one I sort of had that Ron Rivera would certainly want me to bring up, and that is culture. Now, here's the thing on this one. I give Ron Rivera a lot of credit for shielding, guarding his players from all the chaos that was happening over his 4 years with all the Snyder investigations and tons of other things. I think Ron Rivera is a good guy. I think he's a nice guy. I think he understands how to care for his players. You can tell even by the way they performed just the last game. They have not quit on him. And I think that says something about him. And the second he walks out the door, none of that matters. There's nothing going to be sustainable from that. The biggest change between 2020 and now is Dan Snyder is gone. And once Ron is gone, other than the name, that will be the end of the Dan Snyder era, essentially. I mean, there'll be lingering effects because of their, you know, various decisions that were made. But in general, that will be it. So the biggest change is that all the Snyder stuff is gone. That has nothing to do with Rivera. And like I said, when you're 4-12, you can't like say, hey, take this attitude going forward. It all needs to be started over. So even though, again, I give him credit for what he did in those 4 years, it is not applicable, I don't think, to the next guy that comes in. Therefore, it's better, but it's not for reasons that have to do with Rivera.
Yeah, and I think it's also a matter of, okay, so first of all, like, culture is this vague word, right? So you always have to kind of be careful, like, how do you define it? But I did a whole thing on this on my podcast this week. The bulk of the culture problems with Washington really were business operations as opposed to football operations, right? Like the workplace misconduct scandal, the financial scandal, those were mostly business operations things. Business ops for the team having been cleaned up, A, is not Ron's doing. Like, business ops, that's not under his purview. And also B, the team had no choice but to clean that stuff up. Like, okay, whether the team wanted to or not, saw the light or not, like, when you have the NFL launching multiple investigations, Congress investigating you, you have to clean your act up. So, like, those things getting better were bound to happen. What falls under Ron's leadership, of course, is football operations. And I just don't see how you can argue that the culture has been significantly improved. The record over his 4 seasons, awful. The point differential over his 4 seasons, awful. The drafting over his 4 seasons, awful. I mean, where is the improvement? And, you know, there also has been ugliness, okay? The Ryan Vermilion thing, that was Ron's guy. Ron brought him here. That was ugliness. Look, the DeShazer Everett Olivia Peters thing, especially what came out in recent days, this wrongful death lawsuit filed by Olivia's mom, Kathleen, against DeShazer and two current Commanders players, Jamin Davis, Benjamin St. Juice. I'm not blaming Ron for what happened to Olivia Peters, okay? But what does it say that this woman died and now two of your players are involved in a wrongful death lawsuit, one of whom, by the way, was drafted in part because of his character, right? Jamin Davis. Remember how everyone talked about that? Oh, this guy.
Military background.
Yeah, such great character. And, you know, we found out last year about his speeding problem. But now it turns out that he and Benjamin St. Juice may not have been little innocent angels in what happened with Olivia Peters 2 days before Christmas 2021. So, you know, show me where the culture has been upgraded. Like, I'm open to new information and alternate opinions, but I don't know how you could put forth an argument that Ron has drastically upgraded the culture. I think it's something that he and a few other people say, but there's actually not proof of that. He has not upgraded the culture. And to your point, it doesn't mean that he's a bad person. I don't think that he is. I actually have a lot of respect for Ron Rivera. You know, he's had an impressive football life when you think about it. But the truth is the truth. The culture in terms of things that have fallen under his leadership is not significantly better.
All right. So we send we go to the judges' scorecards here. who's the guy who was at the boxing?
Mills Lane was the referee, but
right, it was like Ferdy Pacheco. No, not Ferdy Pacheco. Who's the guy? Oh crap! I'll think about it. Howard Letterman, is that the name? I think
you would know better than me.
All right. Well, whomever. The judges' scorecards for you, Mr. Galdi. What's the final verdict? Did Ron Rivera leave this team in a better way than what he found?
No, he didn't. He left it basically in the same state, which is shambles and not good. And that doesn't mean that there weren't some good things. There weren't some good moments. There were. Okay. I was excited like a lot of people in 2021 with that 4-game winning streak. And there were, you know, a few other moments. You know, Ron has that saying that he makes, right? He had his moments. They had their moments, right? That's what I would say about Ron's tenure. He had his moments, but ultimately, no. And that's the shame of all of this. We're basically right back to where we were at the end of the 2019 season with one big difference and one important difference, and that is that the ownership is different, and that is huge.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be funny if they actually do finish with the number two pick. It will literally be the same pick that he acquired. But now, and again, for the exercise we were just doing, we were saying Chase Young is not that pick yet. It's just that pick. Well, part of it is, though, the number two pick that he did inherit is not only gone, he traded it for a compensatory third. So the devalue of that is way worse. I think it's fair to say that it's a split. I think because, at least, like I said, that group before had a lot more promise, even if there wasn't, as we debated, what star potential mean or stars mean, but had more promise. This group, the three guys who were, oh, by the way, we didn't mention Tress Way. He's also, you know, another guy that's carried over. But, you know, the same guys are the same stars, but they've all gotten paid and they've all got more tread on those tires. And there's nobody else where you're like, hey, you know what, though? I'm excited to see where Forbes goes or Jamin Davis or whatever. And I think that to me makes it hard to say he left it in a better place. And I don't even know it's completely neutral unless we see that, as you mentioned before, new coaching gets guys like St. Juice and Forbes and Dotson up levels than we've seen. If that happens, then that's a different story about what we're wrong. But yeah, at best it's neutral. And I think if I had to lean any other way, it would be no, it didn't leave it in a better place.
It's really unfortunate that this is even a conversation, because if I would have told you in January 2020 that 4 years later we would be debating whether the team was better off then than it is now, with now being January 2020, you would have said, what? Like, the whole point of this is to be a lot better in the coming years. And instead, that the possibility existed, the mere notion could exist that this team is right back to where it was 4 years ago is really, that is such a buzzkill. That is such a bummer of a thought, but that's the reality, and it's why Ron and I think a lot of people are about to be fired.
Oh, joy. Well, look, at the end of the day, it is the season is almost over. One game to go. It's Dallas week. We mentioned nothing about Dallas week, which is appropriate for where this is because, needless to say, only thing that matters for Dallas week is they lose this game. I'm sorry for the people who still can't accept that reality, even if it's Dallas. Them losing is way better for this organization going forward than them winning. We'll talk again next week, but any sort of final thoughts for you on this season or the Ron Rivera? Well, we'll talk about Ron Rivera next week, but any final thoughts on sort of this season and, we didn't even talk about the quarterback. Do you care that Sam Howell is starting this week or not?
Well, I do. And from a standpoint of, I didn't want Jacoby Brissett starting. I thought that would have been extremely pointless. So I wanted Sam or Jake Fromm. It ends up being Sam. To sort of continue this theme of the way this season has gone, he ends up becoming the first guy to start every regular season game for Washington at quarterback since 2017. And like, nobody really cares because it's not, you know, if you would have said that in August, you would have said, okay, well, that means that Sam had a pretty good season. At least you can't say that, you know, he sort of ends up doing it, by accident because he wasn't supposed to start the last game, the game against the Niners. And so that just kind of fits this motif. And, you know, I think it's interesting too that Ron, in his final week as Washington head coach, makes one more big quarterback decision, right? Going back to Sam as a starting quarterback. And on that day, ends up talking so much about his number one fail with Washington, and that is never figuring out quarterback. I thought that, these recent Ron pressers have been interesting because, look, they've been kind of sad and depressing because, like, Ron basically, you guys basically are asking Ron in a variety of ways, you're about to be fired, how you feeling? Okay, like that's basically what every question is. And it's been interesting because Ron has gotten reflective and he has kind of pulled back the curtain a little bit on some things. And he on Wednesday afternoon basically saying, yeah, I never figured out quarterback and that's what doomed me more than anything. It's totally true. I mean, that's not a big revelation, but I just found it interesting that he kind of was that upfront about it. And there's no doubt he never figured that out. And we would have loved for him to have figured it out this season with Sam, but you can't say that.
You know, to your point, and this is one of the things I think it's gotten more frustrating over time, is that Ron Rivera came in here and he wasn't Bruce Allen. He seemed like much more of an adult than Jay Gruden. Sorry, Jay, but you know what I mean? Like this was like a man in charge, you know, Jay. I mean, Jay never had the chance to be in charge fully, but you know what I mean? So Ron in charge. He's got this persona, the Riverboat Ron thing. It's going to be his sort of his way or the highway. And then he had all these sayings and all these things. It was like, okay, there's something here. The guy went to the Super Bowl. They were 15-1. I don't know. Why not? But over time, the messaging, I think, just got became more and more discounted because it seemed more and obvious that, like, so much of what he was saying was just trying to pitch a product, basically. And I think the Sam Howell thing is you know, the middle of the season in particular, on and on about how this season is about the young quarterback, the young quarterback, the young quarterback. And like you just said, we get to the end and he's like, yeah, well, I never figured this out. Well, I mean, so you're saying Sam Howell isn't the guy? I mean, obviously it's not going to be for him, but it, you know, I remember when Taylor Heinicke after the 2021 season, hey, Ron, Ron starts talking about what they're going to do at quarterback. I don't think he mentioned Taylor Heinicke as like an option, even though he kept saying all season, oh yeah, Taylor, sure, we're great. It was just too much of pitching product as opposed to being candid. And I think all that stuff sort of caught up to him eventually here.
Yeah, the inconsistency with the messaging, I think, was a function of a lack of conviction in any of the messaging and never really having a true belief in the right way to be doing things and going about things. You know, I think there were maybe some general philosophies, but the fact that he changed his mind on so many things was not a sign of, hey, he's open-minded and open to change, because of course we all should be open-minded and open to change. This was more a reflection of there's a lack of conviction, a lack of belief, a lack of direction, a lack of knowing where you should be going. And that's a problem. That was a big problem with all of this. I mean, just the fact that he in his do or die season turned over the offense to someone else, turned over the scheduling to someone else. Like, you know, I think a lot of people would look at, hey, you either do well or you be fired. Like, you want to control that. And instead, he like willingly handed over so much of this stuff to Eric Bieniemy. And it's like, why'd you do that? Well, because he thought it sounded good and, you know, it might come across well. And, you know, but it's like, that kind of was Ron. There was just a lack of him knowing what to do and where to go, as you want a leader of an organization to know. And that I think really stood out, especially these last few years.
What has stood out, of course, to any podcast listener over the many years is you got to listen to Al Galdi on the Al Galdi podcast. He's also got his Nats podcast. Or are we having, is it more fun talking about the Nats these days, or is that also equally frustrating?
Well, the Nats have done like nothing this offseason, right? So there's not been much to talk about with them. But, you know, the Nats are another team where they're rebuilding. We'll see how it goes. And we are in such a unique time right now in DC sports, where you have the Wizards tanking / rebuilding. You have the Nats rebuilding. You have the Capitals retooling and actually doing pretty well. Although, boy, they are up and down. Some nights things look good. Other nights they look awful. And then we have the Commanders, who almost certainly are about to embark on a rebuild. So I don't know that we've ever had this, potentially four teams all retooling / rebuilding at the same time. We've always seemingly had at least one that's a contender, or at least you'd like to think is a contender. We don't have that right now. I mean, I guess the Caps could make the playoffs. It's possible. But these are strange and foreign times in DC sports, for sure.
And not only that, I'm not discounting some of the Nats prospects, or Bilal Coulibaly, or, you know, whichever guy you want to point to here, or whatever the Caps have. But like, boy, it was a few years ago, there was Harper, there was RG3, there was Ovechkin, Strasburg.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're looking at now. I don't know. There's like, it's hard to even look at any of these teams like, well, which I basically, if the standard sports talk radio question is, which team is closest to doing something? I have no idea. I don't think the answer is anybody.
No, I mean, you know, the biggest star is Alex Ovechkin, but, you know, he's not having a great season in terms of goal production, and he's not going to be playing forever. Okay. Like, you know, the end is coming at some point here. And yeah, when he retires, who is the next guy? Who's the next big alpha sports star in this city? We don't have that right now. Hopefully someone emerges. Hey, maybe Emmanuel Forbes busts out as a shutdown corner next season, but I don't know that anyone's holding his or her breath on that.
Don't know. All right. If you got thoughts on that, you can hit Al up on Twitter or X at Al Galdi. I'm at Ben Standing. And Al, we'll talk next week on your podcast. Keep this going for a while longer. And, you know, I think we'll have a lot to talk about next week that will very much be what's happening going forward. That in and of itself will be exciting, just because it'll be very, very different than what we've been discussing for the last 20 years here in the nation's capital. Thanks, guy. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Big thanks to Al Galdi for his time. Thanks to everyone here for checking out the podcast. Again, Monday, we'll have a episode recapping whatever happens, where we stand, and what's going on from there. But for now, have a good weekend. We'll see what happens Sunday against the Cowboys. Until next time, see ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.